Hello, everybody. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and as always, I'm just so filled with gratitude that you all are making the time and the space to show up to strengthen our awareness of love. So we're all doing this for each other. We're doing this for the world. So let's join together and have some moments together in silence. And beginning by taking a nice deep breath in and out. And turning our attention within to our sense of willingness. Our willingness to see differently. Our willingness to loosen the world from all we thought it was. Our willingness to release our fixed perceptions. And just resting in this willingness, offering this willingness to Holy Spirit. And resting in trust, knowing that it's done. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight. Taking a nice, mindful breath in and out, and with the love in your hearts and light in your mind, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. All righty. So we've been reading a really, really awesome section. They're all awesome. How can I say that about any one section in the course? And we're going to just do a little bit of a repeat from where we left off last week. So we're going to begin, if you have the Sparkle Edition, it's page 494. It begins at the first full paragraph on the page. The sentence is, "It is impossible to see your brother as sinless." If you have the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, and that corresponds to Chapter 20, Part 8, Paragraph Number 61, "It is impossible to see your brother as sinless." That also corresponds to Chapter 20, in FIP, Chapter 20, Chapter 20, Part 7, Paragraph Number 4 in the Foundation for Inner Peace Edition. "It is impossible to see your brother as sinless." And then in the CE, the Circle of Atonement Edition, it's page 653, Paragraph Number 4. There will be, FYI, some different paragraph breaks coming up if you're following along in the FIP edition. So that's just an FYI, and you can always just kick your feet back and just let me read to you if that at all gets confusing. So here we go. "It is impossible to see your brother as sinless and yet to look upon him as a body." Let's read that one more time. This is a showstopper last week. "It is impossible to see your brother as sinless and yet to look upon him as a body." Is this not perfectly consistent with the goal of holiness? For holiness is merely the result of letting the effects of sin be lifted, so what was always true is recognized. To see a sinless body is impossible. For holiness is positive and the body is merely neutral. It is not sinful, but neither is it sinless. As nothing, which it is, the body cannot meaningfully be invested with attributes of Christ or of the ego. Either must be an error, for both would place the attributes where they cannot be. and both must be undone for purposes of truth. I'm going to read the next paragraph as well. The body is the means by which the ego tries to make the unholy relationship seem real. The unholy instant is the time of bodies. Again, another showstopper. The unholy instant is the time of bodies. But the purpose here is sin. It cannot be attained but in illusion. So the illusion of a brother as a body is quite in keeping with the purpose of unholiness. Because of this consistency, the means remain unquestioned while the end is cherished. Vision adapts to wish, for sight is always secondary to desire. I want to reread that sentence one more time. Vision adapts to wish, for sight is always secondary to desire. And if you see the body, you have chosen judgment and not vision. For vision, like relationships, has no order. You either see or not. And I'm going to pause there. So this might feel like some of the mind-bending ideas that the Course presents, because we talked about this a little bit last week. If it says so clearly that it's impossible to see your brother as sinless and yet to look upon him as a body, what are we doing all the time but seeing bodies? So we must be seeing the effects of something that is not love if we're seeing bodies. It goes on to say in the second paragraph that I just read, the unholy instant is the time of bodies. The unholy instant is the time of bodies. So here is this idea where the Course metaphysics is saying that, you know, we had this tiny mad idea that we forgot to laugh at. It was all over the instant that it happened, but in that one tiny instant is this time-space universe that we seemingly perceive. And the purpose of it is to keep this idea of separation in place, to maintain the idea that we must be separate from one another, that we must have pissed off God by dreaming up this dream, that these bodies must be real. And the only way that these types of things can seem even like they make any sense is in illusion. So it's also quite amazing to me and profound, this latter sentence that I read twice, vision adapts to wish, for sight is always secondary to desire. That's huge. That's saying so clearly, we see what we want. If we want to start seeing witnesses for love, we will see them. If we want to side with the Holy Spirit's vision, we will start to see witnesses that justify our choice. If we are looking for separation, for division, for ego, we're going to see it because that's then what we are cherishing. So it says you either see or not. So either we're seeing with Holy Spirit or we're not seeing at all, because seeing with the ego is nothing, just like it's saying that the body is nothing. It's completely neutral. I have some other thoughts, but I feel prompted to pause there and just see if anybody has any questions or comments related to this material thus far.
I loved the first line that stated that nothing is, the body is not the spirit, the body is not the ego, the body is, and I love the way it said that. The body is just the body, that's all it is. It's, I thought that, like, yeah, I think that is really so amazing, because what we generally do is we connect the ego, the I, with the body and make it all one unit. It's like we're the body mind, and we're not the body. So we cannot connect the body and the mind together. But that's generally what we do. And I think it's so amazing to say that, you know, to make it really clear that the body is not really connected or associated in that intimate way with the mind. Not really. It's just neutral.
Right.
And I love that.
And I like how you put that, Meg, that we are completely identified with it. We do believe that it is who, you know, who I am. And in fact, this is so clearly saying that it is not. So thank you for highlighting that.
Corinne, this is
Sue.
Yes, Sue. I have gotten the impression in reading the course and in my prayer time, I guess, that I'm misunderstanding the word see. Because the word see really means understand, to have knowledge. Because it says in the course that even though you will continue to see bodies, you will not believe in them. You will see that they, you know, you will look past them. So to say that we're to see a body is somehow you're seeing your brother, that he's not sinless and so forth. So, that grips me at first until I start to think, okay, no, it's not that I'm not going to see bodies around. I'm going to be, you know, in this world where there are no bodies. I'm going to see beyond and see the spirit within and maybe see it, you know. Like sometimes I can see I'm sure a lot of you people can do that too, just see kind of a light around the body. Like there's something else there. That idea of to see is to understand what's really going on is, I don't know if I'm right on that.
Thank
or not.
You. Well, I have a couple of points that might help here. So there's two different ways of seeing, just like there's two voices in our heads with two choices constantly. And the two different ways of seeing are either seeing with your body's eyes, which is seeing form, we know, you know, how to see with our body's eyes and feel with the senses, or we're learning a different type of sight, which is referred to as vision, which is not of us, which we're not seeing with the body's eyes, but which is coming through us from the Holy Spirit. So the Holy Spirit, the way the Holy Spirit works, at least the tiny little, you know, bit perhaps that I get from studying the course, is that the Holy Spirit sees only the truth. In other words, it sees our shenanigans here, but it looks straight past them because it knows that all the form is false. So it looks straight to the truth beyond. Therefore, it's only upholding the truth. And so the Holy Spirit can't see sin. It looks straight past any mistakes that we might make, again, to only what is true, which is always love. So it's the Holy Spirit's vision that we're learning how to, quote-unquote, see with. So there's basically two different ways that we can define seeing. One is seeing with the body's eyes. One is more like that understanding that you're describing. But it even goes deeper than understanding because it's more of again, seeing with a vision that is coming through us from the Holy Spirit, which is part of us. It's nothing separate from us. And in that is understanding. Now, just to clarify one more term, the Course uses the term knowledge versus perception. Here in this realm of form, we perceive. It says that projection makes perception. So we know how to perceive. That's what we do down here. Knowledge comes in the realm of formlessness, where that is, knowledge is, you know, knowing God. Maybe we'll get some glimpses of that, but it's not, I don't even know if we get glimpses, I think we get glimpses of it here, but it's not sustainable here. If we had that knowledge, we'd be done with this in an heartbeat in a moment. So that's just another clarifying term. So does that help, Sue, with the two different types of ways of seeing?
Yes, it does. Yeah, but okay. That's, yeah, seeing with the body and seeing with vision. Yes, but it's like, I guess the way it's stated, it's almost like it's a negative goal. Do not see the body. It's like saying, do not think of red shoes, you know?
Right.
It's like,
and
you know,
it kind of puts
an obstacle there that you're not supposed to do something. And the mind just
and
says.
And so, yes, I get completely what you're saying. And so just a reminder with where we ended last week, we're going to read this tonight. The very last paragraph in this section says, because the natural question is like, okay, well, how can I see my brother without the body? I'm reading now from the course. It says, your question should not be, how can I see my brother without a body? Ask only, do I really wish to see him sinless? So that's where our focus needs
positive
to be.
Goal.
We don't need to worry about, yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
A positive goal. And that's one you can work for, because you can't work for toward a negative goal.
Exactly, exactly.
Right.
Thank you.
That,
that was helpful.
Okay.
Awesome.
Seems to me it takes an awful lot of willingness to turn to the Holy Spirit in all of this, because really the Holy Spirit is the only thing that transcends this, these thoughts we have about the body and sin and all of that.
You know, I feel prompted tonight, which is interesting because I haven't shared this with you all yet, because I've sort of been in it and finding my way through it and still sort of processing. We have lost two of our chickens this summer to a bacterial infection, it seems, that is, according to everything in the world, really not treatable. And it's an inflammation of their oviduct, and apparently it's like something that is very risky for chickens to get once they're over 2 years. Which ours are. So the first one that we lost, you know, was kind of devastating, because I was expecting that we were going to have all six of our flock, you know, for quite some time. And then we lost a second. So that was first the end of June, then one the end of July, and now we have a third one that is right now she's on antibiotics, so it's possible we caught it early enough that something is going to happen with it. But I'm sharing this with you now, because the first chicken that we lost was the chicken who I had shared the story that she actually had, something happened where she had a physical healing. Her belly had been blown up to like the size of like a softball. Like it was huge. And I shared with you all just the work that I was doing with being willing to only side with the truth about her, and rather rapidly, again, from everything that I read, that was a sign that they were just going to be, you know, that you should really kind of put them down at that point. She got better and, you know, lived without symptoms for quite some time. And then we lost her. And so I sort of went through this, like, you know, feeling of like, what's going on? Like, I really want to understand. And what has been coming to me is that we can't judge the body as real and then try to apply truth to it. We can't try to apply truth to something that is neutral. And we just read this tonight. It said, as nothing, which is what the body is, the body cannot meaningfully be invested with attributes of Christ or of the ego. So if we're trying to apply truth to this thing that we think is meaningful, is you know, anything but neutral, it's not going to work because it's neutral. And so what I've sort of come to, because, you know, I'm sure you can all relate in having lost pets. I know a number of you, Deidre and Paula, I know a number of you have gone through this. It's been like pet after pet. Like, this has been hard. It's been really tough. And I know an outsider would be like, they're just chickens. But I've gotten to know these little creatures, like, you know, intimately, just because we spent a lot of time with them in our backyard. So it's been tough. And what I've come to, what's sort of been like revealing itself to me, is that the Course says, I don't have the exact full quote with me, but it says that, you know, what is this awareness of truth cost? Quote, unquote, it costs the whole world you see. Meaning, it's either I let go of the whole world, like all of my ideas about it, and open up to the truth beyond it completely, and that's, I believe, where true healing lies. And, I mean, of course there can be physical healings before then. I've experienced them. I know many of us have talked about those types of things on the call. But the resurrection, which I believe the Course is leading us to, like, not be crucified, but the resurrection part of there being a different way of leaving this world, meaning that the body and the world merely cease to seem to be, I'll speak for myself because this has been my experience, I cannot intellectually get there. I have to be where I am, which is believing, you know, every day when I wake up, I still think I'm Corinne. But what you just said, Paula, about the Holy Spirit and the willingness being everything, I was crying about this the other day to my husband, and I was just expressing that, like, I was expressing this to him, that it's not just a little part of the dream that I'm going to try to apply this to make my dream okay. It's that I am willing to wake up from this and then in that see how the dream reflects my choice. So I can walk around in this world and know that this is not my home. And no matter what is happening in the world, no matter where I am, no matter what seems to be happening around me, I can know that I am, and every seeming figure, you know, every being shares that same eternity and that same love. So I hope that was clear in that, because I feel like this section is speaking to the all or nothingness that, like, it's not possible just to save a little part of the dream or just like a little part, you know, of the body for ourselves. It's about giving it all over. And this is, in giving it all over is where we truly, truly start to learn about the holy relationship and true awakening and true love. But this is a gentle, gentle, gentle process. It's nothing that happens before we want it to. So that is what you brought up for me, Paula. So thank you.
I don't see that there's any other way, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Corinne, mm-hmm. I don't see that there's any other way. But it's a real challenge. It's a real challenge.
It is. It is.
But the Holy Spirit, it doesn't have a problem with it, so why should I?
Exactly. So it doesn't have to be a challenge. It does not have to be a challenge at all. The only challenge that we might seem is just a reflection of our own desire to not want to give things to the Holy Spirit, to want to hang on, you know,
our
to want
desire
to
just
keep being
be Paula and Corinne, and that's it.
Exactly.
Damn it.
Exactly.
An operative word is surrender. Because
I like that word.
In surrender, there's actually effortlessness in surrender. Because to not surrender is to hold on, and there's tension, but we don't really see it that way. But the effortlessness comes from surrender. So it isn't really hard. It's you have to get the idea in the mind that it's effortless, because we think it's effort, but it's the opposite of effort. It's the exact so it's not we have to try. No, we don't have to try. We just have to surrender.
That's very true. And the Course actually says, and I just read this today, that, you know, vigilance is necessary only for you to finally realize that you don't need to be vigilant at all. That, again, love with a capital L, God, truth just is, and there is an absolute supreme effortlessness. You're absolutely right, Meg. I love that.
Do you remember where you read that particular sentence, Corinne?
Which one?
About
the
vigilance.
Vigilance. I can look it up in the FIP right now. It is.
I have Sparkle, too, if that's easier for you.
Oh, you have. Okay, I don't have it.
Either
I'm
one
looking
works.
It up
either
in
one.
The.
Okay.
Okay. So, vigilance itself. Wow, vigilance is actually quoted a lot in the course, so I'm not finding it with just one word search. I can get back to you if I don't find it with this next search. Vigilance itself is unnecessary, as I believe. Nope, that's not coming up either. Tanya, if you want to send me... Ah, is this it?
You know, it's okay. Don't go to any trouble. I love this sentence. It's very profound for me.
Here it is. I found it.
Okay.
It says, vigilance does require effort, but only until you learn that effort itself is unnecessary. That's what I was referring to. So that's cool. The effort itself is unnecessary. That's exactly what Meg was just saying. In FIP, that is Chapter 6, Part 5, The Lessons of the Holy Spirit. Then it's in Part C, like Corinne.
Part 5.
Paragraph
part
number
C.
10. It's a long one. Chapter 6,
yeah.
Part 5, then Part C, then Paragraph 10.
Part C. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ah. Let's read another paragraph. Who sees a brother's body has laid a judgment on him and sees him not. He does not really see him as sinful. He does not see him at all. In the darkness of sin, he is invisible. He can but be imagined in the darkness, and it is here that the illusions you hold about him are not held up to his reality. Here are illusions and reality kept separated. Here are illusions never brought to truth and always hidden from it. And here, in darkness, is your brother's reality imagined as a body, in unholy relationships with other bodies, serving the cause of sin an instant before he dies. I'm going to read the next paragraph, too. There is indeed a difference between this vain imagining and vision. The difference lies not in them, but in their purpose. Both are but means, each one appropriate to the end for which it is employed. Neither can serve the purpose of the other, for each one is a choice of purpose, employed on its behalf. Either is meaningless without the end for which it was intended, nor is it valued as a separate thing apart from the intention. The means seem unreal because the goal is valued, and judgment has no value unless the goal is sin.
You said that last line wrong.
And judgment has no value unless the goal is sin. Thank you. Is that what I said?
No. The sentence before, the means seem real. You said unreal.
I did. Thank you. That's an important distinction. Thank you for catching that. The means seem real because the goal is valued. I almost want to read that again. Let's start with the first paragraph. So who sees a brother's body has laid a judgment on him and sees him not? So... that's saying we're not seeing the truth of our brother. We're not seeing our eternal reality. We're seeing ourselves as limited and separate. He does not really see him as sinful. He does not see him at all. So again, it's almost like you can think about the body as being like a veil that's sort of obscuring the face of Christ, that's obscuring our truth to one another. It's a veil not just for bodies, but for the world also, for everything in form. And so we're not seeing the truth in this darkened veil. We can only imagine and, you know, project onto our brother what we think is there. So those projections, those illusions that we hold about him, it's saying are very clearly not held up to his reality, but that's where the willingness in our work with Holy Spirit comes in, because as we bring those illusions, as we bring our beliefs, our ideas of everything that we think we know to Holy Spirit, we're then now exchanging those things to be willing to see the truth about our brothers instead.
That's a
I want to pause there.
Don't you think?
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is.
Because I could really watch myself in a situation today with these thoughts about my brother that were really not very nice at all. And at least I had, I could just observe them at least and try not to buy into them so deeply and wait. This is so helpful tonight because I'm really feeling the willingness now that we're reading this. I was waiting to feel the willingness, but this is wonderful. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I'm just listening. It's really, that's also too what I love just about these calls, because it brings our willingness meter up. So second paragraph, there is indeed a difference between this vain imagining and vision. So we have the ego's use of sight, so seeing with the body's eyes, and the Holy Spirit's vision, and it's saying there's a difference between them. And the difference is in their purpose. Both are means. One, again, is to utterly convince us of our separation from God, that this is all real and true. The other is a means for waking up to see the truth, to see eternity, to see the fact that this isn't our home. Then it goes on to just say, neither can serve the purpose of the other. So again, vision of the Holy Spirit and the sight of the ego are not, they don't overlap. They're not ever going to be on the same path. Then it goes on to say, for each one is a choice of purpose employed on its behalf. Either is meaningless without the end for which it was intended, nor is it valued as a separate thing apart from the intention. The means seem real because the goal is valued. And judgment has no value unless the goal is sin. So judgment in any form is always, always used for the ego to separate and to make guilty. Comments, insights, anything coming up for anyone about this?
Yeah, we're all actors on the stage, and we forget that we're acting out these roles.
Yes.
The goal is to kind of gently wake up from our firm belief that these roles are real. They're not.
Right. Yep. We take it so seriously, we forget to laugh. Oh, we take it so seriously. We really do, but we have to until we start to learn that there's something else, right? Of course we're going to take it seriously if we think that this is the truth in our reality, until we, again, have those experiences that start to build our trust in something else. So you're right. Thank you for that reminder about, like, this all being a giant stage, a big act that's happening. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Christine. I just think it's really odd that I'm very, very new to, I don't even have the right book. I just have Alan Cohen's Made Easy book, but I spent my whole life
around. Oh, I have to say, I'll send you the sparkle.
Fine. Thank you. It's fine. I'm just enjoying listening, but this has been my whole life is around bodies and trying to get my body to a certain size and help other people get their bodies to a certain size. So it's just super interesting and enlightening that that's what you guys are talking about tonight. I'm like so inspired and kind of trying to take all this in that that doesn't matter. I don't know. It's just, I just have to think about this. It's really, really,
yeah. Oh my gosh. Christine, take a deep breath because this is a very different pathway. It really is very different, and yet it doesn't mean that anything that we are doing out there necessarily is going to change or needs to change or anything like that, but it gives us a new set of eyes, you know, a new meaning and a new purpose, and it is very different. So along the way,
I love it.
I
love it. It's very enlightening to me. It's very exciting to think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I would say, in a way, shallow. Like, you know, it's made so important, or in my life, for some reason it has. And then, I don't know. Anyway, I'm enjoying it. It's just nothing I've ever heard, and I really, really like it.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad. And you said a word that really stood out to me about this being exciting, because it is exciting. It's been very exciting to me, especially with my anxiety history, to start to open up to this different thought system that is rock solid in peace. And even if these ideas, you know, seem like way different or way out there, that the more we sort of dive in, the more things start to make sense, and, you know, our experiences sort of affirm the fact that, like, we're onto something. So it is exciting. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Corinne?
I heard someone else. Yes.
Hey, this is Maurice. Just wanted to say thank you. Was that Christine that just said that?
Yeah.
Yes.
I just want to thank you for what you said, because your excitement was exciting to me. So I get that. It was just really awesome, and it just made me smile, and I just had to say it.
Aww.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Corinne, this is Franny.
Hi, Franny.
Hi. I just want something that's coming up for me as we're reading these paragraphs, and it's just about the news this week with our president and with white supremacy, mm-hmm. neo-Nazis. I've been finding, mm-hmm. like, really taking the course material and trying to apply it, because I see how much I do want to condemn our president or be mm-hmm. outraged, and also say the white supremacists and neo-Nazis, but also realizing, wait a minute, I know a little bit more now. I can see this differently, and I've prayed on that, but all week long, that's what's been going on in my mind. And as we're reading this, that's what's coming up for me.
Mm-hmm. I'm grateful, Franny, that you just brought that up, because I really, really relate. And area code, I forget who this is, 704. Is that Steve, I think? I think that's Steve. Area code 704?
Yeah.
I'm hearing some background. I'm hearing some movement or some background noise. So if you wouldn't mind... if you could mute your line, that would be fantastic. Thank you so much. Franny, this is big. And you know what? I actually thought of Trump when we were reading tonight, when it says, vision adapts to wish, for sight is always secondary to desire. Mm. You know, it's so funny, because now I'm not a Trump person, but taking sort of a step back.
We're not being judgmental around that, sure.
Yep. Taking a step back and sort of looking politically at what happens, I've been seeing some Facebook posts lately about, oh, just go blame Trump for that too. Go blame Trump for that as well.
Right.
So Trump supporters are now saying that Trump non-supporters are blaming him for everything. And yet when Obama was president and they didn't like him, they blamed him for everything. So it's like both sides do the exact same thing. Both sides, you know, criticize the other side for doing what they had just done with the last president. It's almost comical. And I, on a large scale, very much, very much feel that this is all happening. It's like the source of the infection has to come up to the surface. It's what we've been doing. The darkness in our minds, we need to bring it to the light, to see it, to look at it with the Holy Spirit, to hand it over and to get something differently, and to receive something different. And I just feel like on a big scale, this is happening. You know, the ickiness,
right.
The darkness is coming up to the surface, and those of us, at least that are on this path, have our way of working with it, of being willing to bring it, you know, what we see to the Holy Spirit. And collectively, you know, we as a society evolve very slowly. I've seen so much coming together to denounce white supremacy, to denounce racism, that it gives me a lot of hope. So I'm now going on a tangent, but going back to just this idea that vision adapts to wish, for sight is always secondary to desire, what we want is what we're looking for. So if we want to condemn, we're going to find things that justify that. If we want to forgive, we're going to find our willingness to do that work as well. So that's big. That's really big, and I'm glad you brought that up, Franny. Super, super helpful. Yes.
I wanted to ask you, do you think then the like laws of nutrition really don't matter? For example, if the body's not real, so why do we even like take care of it, or do we take care of it in terms of eating well or exercise? And I only ask that because, you know, I was obsessively doing that for years, you know, prior to, like, getting on the spiritual path. And then now it's gone the other way where I'm just not really doing anything. I'm not, you know, necessarily eating really bad, but I'm not eating really well. I'm not exercising that much. And I haven't found that balance. And I'm curious, for those that kind of have been doing this for a while, does the Holy Spirit, does the higher voice within you also kind of direct you as to if one should or shouldn't do those things, or it doesn't matter because the body's not real anyway?
That's a great question. I actually wrote a post about that once with the exact same question, like, why should I bother doing anything healthy, quote unquote, if this isn't real? And it always goes back to the idea that we have to be where we are. So the ultimate answer is that no, we can eat. You could exist on nothing. That, like, it doesn't matter. But somebody at that point is in a very, very different frame of mind. Mind state, I'm at a loss for words. Their awareness of truth has grown exponentially. And that's, I'll speak for myself, that's not where I am yet. So if I'm going to try, if I'm going to sit and say, you know, the body isn't real, I'm not going to do anything for it anymore, I'm engaging in what the Course calls level confusion. So I'm now still believing that it's real, but I'm applying, you know, a teaching that's at a different level from where I am to try to, like, intellectually apply it to where, you know, I'm at. So if I am waking up every day thinking and convinced that, you know, I'm still Corinne and that I need external things to make me healthy, that's going to be my reality. And so I'm going to do those things, but I'm going to do them with the Holy Spirit. So we keep doing what we feel we need to do, but I can take my vitamins with the Holy Spirit. I can eat my kale with the Holy Spirit. And I don't have to remember every time, but I can just hand that over as it comes up to my awareness. And then my need for them, as I'm ready to let it go, as I'm ready to let go of something external to my mind, it's going to fall away. So this is like the gentleness of it. Perfect example is my chicken. I would love to use my mind to heal. I would love to just see only the truth in her, but I'm not there yet. My allegiance is still divided between Holy Spirit and ego. So my trust, my transfer of trust is not complete. So I have to be where I am, and it felt like the right thing to do then was to take her to the vet and get her medication, because that's where I'm at, and that's where she's at. So does that help, Homira, that we have to be where we are, and if we believe this is real, then we should do what we feel we need to, but that we can do it with Holy Spirit?
Yes, it helps a lot. Thank you so much.
That was brilliant.
Okay.
Hey, Corinne. Oh.
I hear Tanya?
Oh, I was just going to
say. Oh, no, that was Mayela, I think.
Hi there. Yeah, I was just going to ask, how do you practice self-compassion and patience during that time of when you're still not, you know, I mean, you know, you can think it, you have the right labels, but you just don't feel that body connection yet with the Holy Spirit?
The self-compassion is key. So if I notice myself, and I went through this with my chicken initially when we lost the first one, what am I doing wrong? You know, why can I, what's going on? What's happening?
That
is only fueling ego. That's only giving fuel to the ego. And remembering that was like, oh, right. I'm not going to do that. I have to just accept where I am. I'm going to accept where I am and just honor where I am and still turn to the Holy Spirit. So I don't know if that answers your question as to how. Was your question about how do you engage in self-compassion?
I just think, how does it look? Like, how does it look like in a healthy way? Like, I know when I'm, when I'm experiencing like a change, you know, I'll call it a change. Like maybe my chickens, for example, would be moving to a new city and, you know, having to restart a community. Everything, in trying to be very intentional, you know, learning the lessons, you know, from my old town and trying to create good relationships. But how, you know, sometimes it's I try to practice like patience and self-compassion and kindness, but I feel like there is this gap from like between once you get to that level of like, okay, it's going to be okay. And I've listened to your podcast, which I really enjoyed, and I'm looking forward to your book because a lot of the stuff that you talk about and then the people you bring on, I mean, it just, the language is very beautiful. It's very intricate, and I mean, it's kind of like an ink blot. You know, you can, anybody can look at it, and you can make something out of it. And it tends to be healthy. I mean, I haven't, like, reached a, oh, you know, I didn't like what she said, or that didn't make any sense. Like, I haven't experienced that yet. I am just constantly spiritually challenged, like, oh, I want to think that way. And that's where my question lies, is, like, how are you patient with yourself between that gap? Do you have any, like, skills or just, you know, because I go through, like, a rage where, like, you know, I'll get angry and I'll just write or I'll just kind of vocalize it and then, you know, a day later I'll think differently about it and then a week later I don't even remember and I'm, like, in the space of, like, oh, everything is fine again.
Yep. So to answer that question for me, that's a great question for that gap. Writing in the journal has been a big thing for me because I use it as a tool and I only write. So if any of you read my journal, you'd be like, oh my gosh, this girl's like, she's got problems. Because I only write when I'm in pain and going through something. I use it to get my feelings out. And I don't even write in it much anymore because it's rare now when I'm going through something big like that. I'll use my journal to get out my feelings, and so I can come to willingness to see it differently again. Because sometimes, again, we got to go through our feelings and through it. We can't step or tiptoe over it. So journaling has been big for me. Having loving reminders. I used to have course quotes on Post-its all over the place. My mom, Paula would remember this probably. My mom used to have her course lesson written on a Band-Aid, and she'd wear the Band-Aid on her hand. Like, no cut, but just
she had more sticky notes in that book. I never saw anything.
Oh, my gosh. And her books are rainbows because she has sticky notes on, like, every single page. But she'd wear a Band-Aid. So it's going to look differently for all of us. Getting enough sleep, you know, getting some exercise, if that helps burn off some steam. But most of all, just remembering, and you know, that gap is going to look differently for all of us. Another question that I'll often ask myself is, where am I stressing myself out? Like, where am I adding where am I adding to the stress? So usually it's in a thought that I should be somewhere else, that I should be further along, that I should be peaceful, that I shouldn't be nervous or anxious. And if I'm shitting on myself, you know, catching that and saying, okay, like, here it is, taking it to the Holy Spirit, willing to see it differently. So are those just a few pointers that were helpful?
Well, it gives me, thank you for sharing your process with me. Yeah, it gives me an idea of, like, oh, okay, well, there are different ways, honoring myself in my own process and figuring things out. Because I have a 5-month-old, so we're also new parents, so like constantly things are changing for us. But, this has been very helpful. Corinne, thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Corinne, can I just share this? Because I had a really hard experience couple of days ago. I fell on my toe, and I heard a crack. And so about 15 minutes after the crack, I went to the hospital and had them x-ray it. And because I'm off and on with diabetes. Sometimes I have it, sometimes I don't, because I do intermittent fasting and then it goes away. And then if I overindulge, it'll come back. But I just wanted to say that the way I look at my body is that I am just along for the ride. So in other words, when I fell and my foot was badly bruised and I thought my big toe might be cut, I went to the hospital. But I didn't feel that it was me going to the hospital. It's hard to explain. It felt that this was just the natural thing that my body was doing. So even though I can say I went to the hospital, that's an afterthought. It's really kind of hard to explain. So it's if I'm eating well, it's not I'm eating well. It's that's what the body is doing. It's eating, but I'm superimposing Meg on top of it, saying I'm eating well because, and then if I'm exercising, because I just started lifting weights, I don't think of it that Meg is exercising. It's the body that's doing it, because when I finished exercising, I had such a wonderful feeling, and it felt intuitively, it felt that the body was having this wonderful feeling and wanted to continue it. So if it's, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm discounting my responsibility, because actually I have no responsibility to it. It's going along with the flow, doing what it seems reasonable or unreasonable, because it does reasonable things and unreasonable things, but I don't claim them as me. I claim them as the experience that's happening, and I'm there with the experience. So there's no guilt, no shame.
That's beautiful, Meg. That's beautiful.
That is beautiful.
Thank you.
Corinne?
It's always helpful for that little bit of distance rather than being associated with the story or just watching it unfold. I'd love to read the last two paragraphs. Was that Sue?
Yes.
You have something quick?
Yes, real quick. Just one thing that I have found tremendously helpful is the muscle you have to develop is trust. That's absolute first. Is trust.
Yes.
You know that there. You know the man who founded AA had a room light when he was in the hospital and after a horrible. The light filled the room, and he knew that there was a higher power, and that's what AA is built upon. There is a higher power that I can trust in, and that's
beautiful.
The muscle that has really gotten me through a lot.
Yeah, that's awesome. Love that. Thank you. Let's go ahead and finish out this section. We have a minute or two left to spare. All right. This is great. The body cannot be looked upon except through judgment. To see the body is the sign that you lack vision and have denied the means the Holy Spirit offers you to serve his purpose. How can a holy relationship achieve its purpose through the means of sin? Judgment you taught yourself. Vision is learned from him who would undo your teaching. His vision cannot see the body because it cannot look on sin. For those of us who are new to the course, FYI, just a reminder, sin is a mistake. It's not sin like we traditionally think of it. So again, his vision cannot see the body because it cannot look on sin. And thus it leads you to reality. Your holy brother, sight of whom is your release, is no illusion. I'm going to read that one more time. Your holy brother, sight of whom is your release, is no illusion. Attempt to see him not in darkness, for your imaginings about him will seem real there. You closed your eyes to shut him out. such was your purpose. And while this purpose seems to have any meaning, the means for its attainment will be evaluated as worth the seeing, and so you will not see. I'm going to read that sentence one more time. Such was your purpose, and while this purpose seems to have any meaning, the means for its attainment will be evaluated as worth the seeing, and so you shall not see. Your question should not be, how can I see my brother without the body? Ask only, do I really wish to see him sinless? Do you really wish to see Trump sinless? Do you really wish to see fill in the blank sinless? And as you ask, forget not that his sinlessness is your escape from fear. Forget not that his sinlessness is your escape from fear. Salvation is the Holy Spirit's goal. The means is vision. For what the seeing look upon is sinless. No one who loves can judge, and what he sees is free of condemnation. And what he sees he did not make, for it was given him to see, as was the vision which made his seeing possible. So both the vision that we are learning to use and the truth that we will actually see were not made by us. That's what was made by God, and that's what we're remembering. That's what we're learning how to see again. So keep this question with you. I love this, love this, love this. Rather than asking, how can I see my brother without the body, ask only, do I really wish to see him sinless? I love that. It just calls to mind the Nunc Sanchez prayer that we've used so many times and shared so many times. Holy Spirit, help me to forgive myself for using whoever to attack myself and to separate from your love. There is our declaration of being willing to see the truth rather than through the eyes of attack. So any final comments or questions before we wrap up? I know we're a couple minutes over. We good to go? I think we're good to go. All right, everybody. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you.
You.
Thanks, Karen.
Bye. Love you.
See you next week.
Love you guys.
Bye.
Have a great week.
Bye.
You too.
Have a great week. Bye, everyone.